Hi. Before we get started with this week's podcast, please be aware today's message does contain some adult language that may not be suitable for younger listeners. We hope you enjoy it.
Good morning. My name's Trevor. I get to be an occasional teacher here. And it was really funny when my wife saw this slide and she poked me right away and she said, 3 weeks isn't going to be enough. Now, I hope she was talking about the world in general and not me specifically is what I was thinking at that one. But it is interesting. I understood, I think, what she meant. It can feel our world maybe just isn't as kind as we'd like it to be. And it's interesting, I talked to lots of different people about this series over the last few weeks. Everybody was like, oh yeah, I get that. I get that. I have to control that. I have to recognize and learn a little bit about my inner asshole. Because we seem to recognize there's a challenge there. Now, I'm going to use the word asshole often this morning. It's a very good description. I don't have to define it. We all get what it is and we get when we're doing it. I just don't want it to move you away from it. So just brace for that. So stay with me because I'm going to start. What brings up your inner asshole? What sets off your inner asshole? Bad drivers? There's a lot of them in Calgary, none in this room, but there's lots. And you'll know that your asshole went off because it's not just a honk or a few fingers and various things. It's like you're telling them how they should drive permanently and you're just going to town on them and it goes on for a little while. And then you remember your kids are in the car. Oops. What if you go to a restaurant and you get really terrible service? Like it's 10 minutes before they take a drink order. They put the wrong spices on the wings. Your steak was slightly overcooked. And you're like, when the waiter comes back and, you know, asks how everything's going, you're like, it's been terrible. Like, I haven't enjoyed this experience. We're paying big money for this. And as you start to heat up, what you realize is the restaurant starts to quiet down. And anyone who's at the same table with you is kind of, like, trying to disappear. Do you and your partner have specific topics that as soon as it starts, it's on? Is it money? If money comes up, is it like, why did you spend it on that? And whew. Is it a friend or family member? Oh, you're going to see them again, are you? And it just, boom. And all of a sudden the yelling starts and you're going, and then there's a knock at the door. And you're like, oh, I hope they didn't hear that. Does this graphic, like this graphic, when I saw it, it just sort of captures when the asshole comes out, doesn't it? Like, it's just a good picture. So what sets off your inner asshole? And what's the carnage of letting it out to those around you? Because there is carnage. For me, my asshole comes out when rules don't make sense. It's just me. So have you ever hung up on your boss? I did. I'm on with a vice president of compliance. That's the ultimate rules person. And they're telling me about this form that I need. I'm like, well, we don't need this form. And when we have investor experience, I've got client notes. Yeah, and you need this form. I said, you haven't updated this form in 20 years. Does it not seem that we should be some updating? Mm-hmm. Yeah, I appreciate that. And you need this form. And it went on like that. And I was trying to get a rational discourse, but my tone was going up. And I just said, yeah, probably. Now, my region director was sitting in my office and watched me hang up. It's like, what did you just do? Huh. Well, I brought out my inner asshole. Thank you. Why do I want to control this thing? Like, I felt very justified that morning in letting that out. It felt very good. But not for long. Because my conduct, not very professional, would you agree, hanging up on your boss, not a good thing? And I started to realize the person on the other end, they were just trying to do their job. And they'd taken some time out of their morning to explain it to me. And then I started to remember something really important. What it feels like when someone's an asshole to me. Whew. Have you ever had a boss come in and start yelling at you for a project? It's like, what's going on here? How come we're past deadline? How did we get past? Where are we going on? And you're watching like coworkers around. You're like, what project are we talking about? And you're just like, oh. Have you ever started like a partner who just gets up in your face? Like you walk in the door. Hey, you were late. Did you get the groceries? Did you do this? Did you do that? And you're like, what's going on? Have you ever had someone accuse you of being an asshole? Like, hey, you're an asshole. Like, I had a friend do that. Ooh. Hmm. What it feels like when people are assholes to me, I've experienced it. Like someone just unleashes hell right on you. You get it all. They let it out. Do you bark back? Do you turtle up? But regardless of your reaction, how do you feel about that person after? How do you feel about that person after? So our behavior impacts our neighbors, and our neighbor's behavior impacts us. It really does. I'm going to tell you about a fun Harvard study on this one. Ooh, Harvard. Sean Acor is a Harvard professor, and they've done a lot of research into that very statement about impact. And he shares where that came from, because he said, we used to only be able to ask, how happy are you? How creative are you? But he said, now we can see, how do you affect the people around you? We can really start to track that. And the research shows, hey, if you're happier, friends within a 1 mile radius have an over 50% chance to become happier. Ooh, that's good. If you get divorced, because there's an asshole side to this, your friends are suddenly 3 times likelier to get divorced. How did that happen? Maybe you've heard about the studies on obesity, that if you have a few friends who are obese, you might get obese. Let me give you how that happens. Let's say I'm going out to dinner with a friend, and I've decided I'm eating healthier. So the waiter comes up and says, what would you like? And I said, for drinks, I'll have water. And they'd order a beer. It's one of my favorite beers, too. And then she comes and says, would you like appetizers? And I say, no. And they order chicken wings. So the chicken wings arrive. My friend's drinking their beer, eating their chicken wings, and I get to eat the carrots and the celery that comes with the chicken wings. Well, this is fun. For dinner, I said, what would you like? I'll have the steamed fish with vegetables, being very healthy. They get the double cheeseburger with bacon and yam fries. So while they're drinking their beer, I'm watching them eat this. Okay, when the server comes up and says, would you like dessert? What do you think my answer might be? I'm done. I've controlled it through 3 courses. Like, let it go. And that's what happens. That's what happens. Our behavior, it does. It impacts other people. And impacts us. So that's not new, right? Like, none of you are surprised by that today. But why would you control your inner asshole if we don't deeply believe that? There's no reason. Because I could just let it out. But when I let it out, my world is not a better place all of a sudden. It's interesting, today we'll be talking about instructions from thousands of years ago. Okay? Ancient wisdom. And it's now being tested out scientifically. Tested and supported, and the science and the wisdom, they say we're connected. That what we do to each other matters. Our actions impact. You want to impact your neighbor in a positive way? Stop being an asshole. Pretty simple. So we're more interconnected than ever. Research from Harvard showing us some neat stuff. And when my behavior comes out, my bad behavior, I need to avoid this. I'm going to tell you about one of my favorite movies. This is the first part. It's a movie I was super excited to see as soon as I heard it was coming to theaters. There's probably some other fans in here. Fellowship of the Ring, J.R. Tolkien. This book's published in 1954. The movie takes to 2001 to come out. And I had read the book decades earlier and fallen in love with this whole setting of Middle Earth. It was like, oh, I was transported. So when I heard the movie was coming out, I was excited, lots of anticipation and some nerves. Like, are they going to get this right? This is a big story to try to tell. So December 10th, 2001, where were you? I was in a movie theater at one of the first screenings for this thing with popcorn in hand, nervous but excited, and I'm just ready to go. And the opening scene is a blank screen with a voice in Elfish. Oh, it was so good. The movie lived up to all my expectations. It was awesome. It was incredible. This epic scene, you shall not pass. For the geeks in the crowd, it's incredible. But even if you're not, it's spread outside of movie lore. This movie was amazing. Okay, why did I tell you about one of my favorite movies? You should all go see it. Yes, that's true. But it's not the reason. It's a good backdrop for where our spiritual ancestors were at this point in their journey. They had a similar movie-like experience. Movie-like. In this case, they were super excited because they were going to go to the promised land. Ooh, sounds good. Our spiritual ancestors might have even been more excited than I was about Lord of the Rings. Might. this movie that they were going to see was 40 years in the making, 40 years. And the anticipation, Moses had set his people free. We let him out of a desert. And I just want to think about this image for a second. The promised land is often referred to as the land of milk and honey. Now, even if you don't like those, isn't that a great image? Like the land of milk and honey. Nothing bad can happen in the land of milk and honey. Like, it's just such a positive piece. It pulls you in. You want to go. But did I mention it was taking them 40 years to get there? And you have to know something about this journey. It's actually an 11-day hike. Sit on that for a moment. This land of milk and honey, spiritual ancestors super excited, is only an 11-day walk. Takes 40 years. That's like saying my movie was delayed. And turning from a 2-week delay to a 10-year to 20 to 40? I'm thinking I'd be a full-time asshole at this point. Like, I'm waiting. What's going on? Let me in. And the passage I'm using today is funny because our spiritual ancestors are close, like almost to the front of a line close. And here's what they said. So we turn around and went back into the wilderness. What? We're not going that way. We're going back. We've been going around in circles for these hills long enough. You don't say. 40 years. Yes, we've been going in circles a long time. So cut through this land that belongs to our relatives. They're terrified of you, but restrain yourself. Restrain myself? Are you serious? I'm ready to go. They're through the land. Why don't we just go through them? I'm not getting a square inch of that land. Really? Pay them up front for the food and water. Okay. And this is the part I love. Because remember, you've been blessed in everything you've done. 40 years of wandering. I've been living in a tent for 40 years. I'm not seeing the blessings in the tent. Imagine, 40 years in a tent. So you haven't lacked one thing. Yeah, I've lacked a few things, but we detoured around. Great, okay, we must be getting close. And now we're going to cut through another road, and we're going through another set of neighbors' yard. And don't pick a fight with these guys. You're not getting any of their land. I'm giving ownership to other people. So the promised land is right there, like right there, we can see it. And we still can't go in. Still not letting us into the theater. And what's worse? You know what's worse? You're giving me instructions about how to interact with my neighbors at this point. I'm done. I don't want to spend any time with my neighbors. I want to let my asshole out. I want to get in now. It's done. It's finished. Is it much of a stretch to think maybe our spiritual ancestors were thinking something like that? But as I read the story of Exodus and 40 years of wandering, before we could get into the land of milk and honey, and I think about what it would be like to be waiting for a movie and just see it delayed, 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 now 40 years. It's funny, it's always come across to me like this. The character of God seems like a bit of an asshole in this. Like, I know, it seems harsh, but God's led his chosen people out of slavery. Okay, that's great. And God's led them safely across the sea, wonderful. And he crushed our enemies, good. And then he made me wonder for 40 years for a journey that's only an 11-day hike. Oh, that's not good. That feels asshole-y. And now the land of milk and honey is right there. Right there. And we're your chosen people, but we can't go in. Well, it doesn't seem like VIP treatment to me. Not at all. But is the character of God being an asshole? Back to my movie for just a moment. Most movies take a few months to film. Lord of the Rings, creation of Peter Jackson at the time, and he wanted to do something different. He filmed all three movies back to back to back. So now a process went from months to years. He spent over a year scouting locations with the best Tolkien artists of a day before he even started filming. And then they had all the weapons created from scratch, all the armor created from scratch. They had full-time glass blowers, so that all the plates and everything looked original. This image back here is Hobbiton. Doesn't that look like a happy place? They had planted it seasons before, so it looked like it grew in. Like, who spends that time on location? They used new technology to do the battle scenes. It was crazy. Before a single frame of film started to go. And all the details showed up. But it wasn't the type of process I think you could have done in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s, maybe not even early 90s. The preparation was invaluable. So the character of God has had his people wonder for 40 years. Why? Well, over 40 years of wondering, they get the Ten Commandments. Oh, yeah, those Ten Commandments. Well, that's pretty good information. They get all the rules for sacrificing. They get all the rules for what's ceremonial, clean, and unclean. They get the foundation for some of their spiritual beliefs. Holy days were outlined. You know, like we've all heard about keeping the Sabbath holy, the seventh day. That's when they, in this wondering, rules were given for how to worship, how to interact with each other, and a justice system's outlined. So these practices given over this 40 years, what's the character of God doing here? It sure looks like preparation, maybe not punishment. To me, reading this now, it really feels different. I don't think they were being hammered, although it sure had to be frustrating. It really feels like the character of God's preparing his people to move through the world well, to be ready for this land of milk and honey. And now in this passage that we're looking at, why is there so much emphasis when we're so close to the goal? I'm thinking, could it be to show us that how we interact with our neighbors matters always? Always. Not just when it's convenient, or when I have the energy, or when I might need help, not even when I feel like I should be an asshole, but even as we're right at the point of completing an important goal, could this simply be showing we shouldn't be assholes no matter how justified we feel? So they're about to go into this land, and God's saying, you're blessed in everything you've done. I've guarded you. You haven't lacked one thing. So they're going to interact with this group of neighbors who's scared of them. And God's telling them, count your blessings. You've probably heard that before. Why is this a strategy? Like, why not simply push through? So these instructions to our spiritual ancestors inspired a little experiment I'd like to run. And this one only involves you and putting just your thinking mind to work, or if you have a pen and paper in front of you doing this. What are five things you're grateful for? Just put pencil to paper and write down five things you're grateful for. Or if you don't have pencil and paper, just take a moment to think about what are five things you're grateful for. How do you feel? Like right now, focusing on what you have in your life, things you appreciate, how do you feel? Do you want a cool bit of neurobiology? Even if your mind went blank, well, I couldn't find anything to be grateful for, your brain's grateful. Because we live in an awesome age, and they run brain scans on people when they ask them, tell me some things you're grateful for. And even if they couldn't come up with something, their brain went to all the places that people go when they go and say, this is what I'm grateful for. This is a terrific book on the science of happiness, the how of happiness. Yes, there is science to happiness. It could easily be subtitled, though, how to avoid being an asshole. Easily subtitled that. So Stanford researcher and professor Sonia L. wants to statistically test what makes people happier. And she does this with proper double-blind studies, and she wants them to be duplicatable. And she wanted to find the things that have the scientific proof of making people happier. And we know happy people are less assholes. Like, that's true. So, gratitude. The simple exercise we just did has a lot of benefits. When you're feeling grateful, you're much more likely to help others. When you're counting your blessings, when you appreciate what you have, it's so much easier to reach out and help others. So our new neighbor rang the doorbell this December, introduced themselves, talked about their lovely dog, Luna. I'm like, oh, that was very nice of them. So made a good impression, didn't I? So first big snow after they moved in, my son's all geared up, got the shovel. I said, go out and shovel. Opens the door. Hey, it's shoveled. We've been in our house 16 years, it's been shoveled by someone else maybe like 3 times. I'm like, ooh, look over, Nathaniel. Oh yeah, our neighbor shoveled. Well, Nathaniel's already all geared up. I said, hey, why don't you go out and shovel the other neighbors? Yeah, but he did. He's a kid, right? But when someone shovels your walk, do you feel more or less assholy? Just asking. Like, it's a lot easier to have a smile on your face when, like, I don't have to shovel my walk. And it paid forward, right? Automatically, we were doing something else because they'd been nice to us. Gratitude has some power. When you're feeling grateful, it builds social bonds. I like being thanked. I think we all like being appreciated. And we want to be around people that appreciate us. So when I thank someone, I'm building some social bonds. This Friday, I'm in a school staff room. And I hear this one teacher saying to these two lovely grade 5 young lady students. She said, Miss Smith would like some hot chocolate, Miss Carmen would like a peppermint tea, and Mr. Wood would like an English breakfast tea. And these young ladies then go about getting all this, everything ready. They even put marshmallows into the hot chocolate. And then they disperse them out to the classrooms. And I'm like, hey, after they left, are you training baristas? Because I'd like a cappuccino next time I come, right? Like, just to be clear. And she laughed. She said, no, those young ladies are delivering beverages to our substitute teachers today. They go ask what they'd like to drink. Then they come back and prepare the drinks and go deliver it. Oh, that'd be a nice way to be greeted at a new position, wouldn't it? Like, oh, someone's doing a drink order for me. Feels great. I said, that's lovely. So those two young ladies must be some of your top students. She does one of these. Make sure no one's around. No. In fact, they're some of the hardest on our substitute teachers. What we're having them demonstrate is when you start with gratitude, the whole interaction changes. Now, she didn't use the word, they're little assholes, but, and that's what I was like to subs, but that's what was implied. But she said the whole thing changes when we started with gratitude, when they say thank you for even asking me for what I'd like to drink, and when you bring a drink with marshmallows. The small social kindness builds such a bond. Gratitude, that warm feeling. There's one of my favorite benefits of gratitude. I love this one. When you're feeling grateful, you're less likely to take life for granted. When you're grateful for your health, the people in your life, the possessions, ooh, you're suddenly like, hey, this is good. So a friend shared with me they've been practicing gratitude at home. And they wanted their children to start feeling appreciative for what they had. So I started with an evening practice. What are you grateful for? And they were floored how hard this was for their son. First few days, nothing. Ooh. After a while, wow, my friend didn't pick me first in the game today. Not very grateful for that. Okay, they kept going. Or my feet got cold when I was walking home. Their son should have had a lot that he was grateful for, but it just wasn't coming out that way. But they kept at it. And what he was grateful for in the transformation was surprising. It was noticeable because there was always something to be grateful for. And even though my friends didn't pick me first today, he still picked me. And yeah, my feet got cold walking home, but the house was warm. So the idea of not taking what you have for granted, it's so important. It's actually a commandment in the Bible. I updated it. You might recognize it as no less than after your neighbor's house or wife or servant or maid or ox or donkey. Don't let your heart set on anything that's your neighbor's. It's really saying be grateful for your partner. Be grateful for your coworkers. Be grateful for your own vehicle. Be grateful for your home. Be grateful for what you have. Being grateful for what you have doesn't change a thing about our situation. But it really helps control the inner asshole. So our spiritual ancestors walked by the neighbors with these instructions. Be grateful for the blessings you've received rather than being assholy about what you don't have. Because not being grateful is a good starting point for bringing out that inner asshole. Starting with gratitude, harder to get there. So I want to ask again, what brings out your inner asshole? What sets it off? Is it bad drivers? Could the next time someone cuts you off in traffic, could you be grateful at least they didn't run into you? Next time you see someone just speed past you, could you be grateful? Huh, I got time at least. They must be in a real rush. Is it terrible service at a restaurant? Could you be grateful you're not going hungry? Could you be grateful you can afford a restaurant? Is your partner talking about that specific topic? If money comes up, could you be grateful for the money you have? What about that friend or family? Could you be grateful that your partner actually cares who you hang out with? Can you see the difference? It's a big difference. If you start with gratitude, it's way harder to bring out your inner asshole. You may have to talk with your partner about the waiter about the service at the restaurant. You may have a discussion with that partner about that friend that they keep bugging you about, but without the asshole present. Oh, that's different. So just counting our blessings is enough to help curb the inner asshole, and that's important. And what about the next group our spiritual ancestors has to deal with? Remember, our spiritual ancestors are on an 11-day hike that's taken them 40 years, and they didn't get lost. Like, this is not fun. So they're human, they might have lost some of the meaning, and they get these instructions. We're going to go through a wilderness, and don't pick a fight with these guys, you don't get any of our land. They just want to push through. They want the promised land. And they still have to be nice to these people. Ever felt threatened? Like you're in a situation, you suddenly notice, whew, I'm not comfortable anymore. Threat. Two springs ago, I'm out for a lovely run. We're in Florida. Leave the hotel on a Sunday morning. I'm going out. Nice run. Right through the neighborhoods. It's beautiful. It's Florida. Like, this is lovely. And all of a sudden, I notice, lawns aren't quite as maintained. Houses are getting a little bit run down. Listen, I've run through sketchy neighborhoods before. That didn't do it. But I was getting looks. There was no smiles. All of a sudden, I was getting like one of these as I was going past. And it wasn't a friendly glance. And seriously, the third time, and I was gone. I had a great run back, by the way, one of the fastest runs I've ever done. But when you feel threatened, are you more likely to bring out your inner asshole? I certainly was. Like, I was on alarm at that point. So this idea inspired me to have a small audience participation moment. And I need to put some concerns to rest. It's a two-part exercise totaling 4 seconds. And you don't have to talk. Okay? So, could I ask everyone to find a partner? So just find someone close to you. Partner up. Just find someone to partner. Give them the finger flick. Okay. Good. Does everyone have one? Okay, great. Okay. I'm going to have you turn and face each other. I have to remember to do this. The person on the left, you have nothing to do on this first part. The person on the right, here are your instructions. I want you to make eye contact and frown hard for 2 seconds when I say go. Person on the right, ready, go. 1, 2. That's some good glaring, guys. Okay. Okay. Shake it off. Okay. All right. It's interesting. Okay. Turn back and face each other. The person on the right, you have nothing to do this time. The person on the left, here are your instructions. I want you to make eye contact and give me a big smile for 2 seconds. When I say go, ready? Go. 1, 2. All right. Shake it off. Okay, that ends the partner participation. Thank you. You can return to seats. Glad I ended with that smile and not the frown, eh? Can you feel the difference, though? Like, all of a sudden, to have someone frown at you, it's unpleasant. It's a little bit threatening. It's like, what's going on here? Like, what did I do? And conversely, someone smiling at you, it's like, yeah, life's good today. So these are the instructions our spiritual ancestors get. Don't pick a fight. Don't be threatening. Move through this land without causing any disruption. And it really seems to me a simple way to say, smile and wave at the nice people as you go through. Because you don't know when you're coming back and you want to make a good impression. Remember, our behavior impacts our neighbors and our neighbors' behavior impacts us. Want to reason and control your inner asshole? We have mirror neurons. When the partner frowned at you, and when your partner smiled, even if your face stayed neutral, because I didn't give you any instructions on the other person, your brain frowned or your brain smiled. And when you frowned, your body started to get activated. Blood pressure went up. Pulse rate elevated a little bit. And when you smiled, activated all the pathways as if you smiled and you start to relax. Again, from this book, remember subtitle, How Not to Be an Asshole in the World. Smiling, yes, smiling is one of the easiest ways to make yourself and everyone around you relax. Because when you smile, our bodies relax, stress decreases, and we just feel better. When someone smiles at you, even if you don't, your brain smiles. Brain imaging shows the same parts of your brain are activated, and your body relaxes, your stress goes down, and you feel better. And when our body's relaxed, you're not feeling quite as stressed, feeling actually a little bit better, is it harder to get to your inner asshole? I would say yes. When I say smiling is powerful stuff, we can sometimes dismiss it, but smiling is powerful stuff, like really powerful. I'm going to give you a really fun image. You guys are all Olympic runners. Oh, congratulations. We're all going for the Olympics. You're planning your race. So think of all the training that you've done to get here. Think about how fast you're going to go, all the coaching you did, all the time you put in, and it comes down to the day of the race and you're ready to go. And as part of your race day strategy, you position smiling family and friends throughout the race route. That's how important smiling is. There's a great book, Endure. Endure, the author, Alex Hutchison, is in fact an Olympic level runner and literally did what I just said. He had a large support group specifically located around the route so that they would smile at him. Those were their instructions as he ran past. Why? Because of some crazy studies on endurance. They had elite athletes on a bike with a screen in front of them, and they said, go as hard as you can for as long as you can. Images would flash by on that screen at 1/100th of a second. That's faster than the brain can register. And the images were all of random people. So the conscious mind didn't pick up anything, but the subconscious did. If the image was of people smiling, better performance, statistically better. Because when you see smiling faces, remember your brain says, oh, relax, it's all calm. I don't need to conserve energy. Go! But if it was random people frowning, worse performance. How come? Brain saying, uh-oh, there might be a threat coming. I got to conserve some energy. And the performance went down. And they replicated the study again and again. That's crazy stuff. Crazy stuff. Do you want to be a good neighbor? Smile. How easy is that? I can still remember this one. Spring 2016, a young lady walks past me. We're walking on the sidewalk. She made brief eye contact and gave me a nice smile. Kept walking. Now, that day got better, but I can still recall that 3 years later. That's such the opposite. Imagine if she frowned at me as she walked past. I'd be like, what did I do? What's going on? But she smiled. So what brings out your inner asshole? I've asked you this lots. You guys should be really in contact with your inner asshole at this point because it's important. I want you to put a big smile on your face, and I want you to think about one of those times where you brought your inner asshole out. I'm going right to that vice president of compliance. That's the moment I'm going to. I want you to get into that, think about it, think about the incident. Keep the smile on your face and try to conjure up the feeling. You can probably find that you're recalling it. Has the emotion changed at all? Isn't that interesting? I can remember the moment, but my asshole isn't there anymore. This impact of a smile to someone, it's that amazing. A smile is an easy way, threat level way down. You know, I don't believe our spiritual journey always has to be so serious, nor does it always have to be so complicated. Punishment, preparation. It doesn't seem to me if we look at God and that thing, even making people wonder for 40 years, it doesn't seem like maybe it was punishment. Could it be our spiritual ancestors were really getting prepared to be good neighbors? What's God preparing you for? Or maybe in a kinder way, what's your life been preparing you for? I don't think your life, my life, our life has been preparing me to be more of an asshole. Do you? Better neighbor? Probably. Gratitude and a smile become less of a threat. It's not groundbreaking. I'm not surprising anyone this morning when I say that. But want to be a better neighbor? Want to control it? Greet the world with gratitude and be just a bit less threatening. And watch the world react completely differently to you. And the positive effect isn't just on the people around you. It's on us. It's on me. Take a deep breath. Imagine a world for a moment where you get one more smile directed your way each day. One more smile. And you take one moment each week just to feel yourself feeling gratitude for what you have. What would that do for you? Just one more smile. And one moment each week where you give yourself a chance to feel gratitude. What does that really feel like? In that world of smiles and gratitude, is it easier or harder to control your inner asshole? Can you give one more smile at each day? Just one. Taking the threat level way down of everyone who you encounter with that smile, aren't you? And can you feel gratitude and let someone know, give a heartfelt thank you once a week? What will that do for the people around you? Like, what will that do for your neighbors? It's powerful. It's a world I'm excited to be in. If it was a movie, we'd all be excited to see it. And we could all have a starring role. So this morning, with a big smile and a heartfelt thank you, go on and make it a great day for you and your neighbor. Thanks, guys.